Busy bodies. No. Don't you love that in there? They're not busy, they're busy bodies. Nice play on words there. If you ever have a question as to what to preach from, you know what? The gospel is always a good idea. So it's a good way. I won't say that you can't go wrong, that's for sure, but it's a good place to start. And so we're going to go to the gospel actually today, which was Luke chapter 21. And that's where we are. And, you know, this is those wonderful end-time prophecies, you know. Isn't that great? Yay! Brother will betray brother. Oh, boy. Parents will betray their children. Great. Sounds wonderful. And it seems like, I was thinking this week, it seems like I always get these. But I know that that's probably not true. It just seems that way. It just seems that I always remember preaching about either this one or, you know, it comes up in all the synoptic gospels, Mark and Matthew. And here it is in Luke as well, too, you know. And, you know, what struck me was it's really pretty interesting. The stuff that you heard there that Jesus talks about, watch out that you're not deceived. Many will come in my name. I am he, and the time is near. Do not follow them, you know. When you hear of wars and revolutions, do not be frightened. These things have to come. Nation will rise against nation. Kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes, famines, and pestilence in various places, and fearful events and great signs from heaven. Oh, boy. Yeah, it sounds wonderful. All of those things have happened. They've occurred, okay? Jesus was right. Go figure. But yes, all of these things that you hear have happened. And I have an interesting account that I'll share with you just briefly about that. This is a writer that I was checking out regard to this, you know. And he said this. He said, today when you go to Jerusalem, as you go up the walk next to the Western Wall that leads onto the Temple Mount area, they've excavated the area to the right side of this walk. They've excavated down to the pavement that was the Roman street that went through the bottom of the Teropian Valley. And as they've excavated down to this Roman street level at the time of Christ, down there on the pavement, which was made of great huge stones, there are these huge stones that have been pushed over the wall and that cracked the pavement below. And you see them as they're just lying there in disarray as they fell and were pushed over the wall and crashed into the valley several hundred feet below, breaking the pavement. I climbed down into that area and touched these big stones, and I marveled at them because I looked at them and I realized that I was seeing the fulfillment of the prophecy of Jesus Christ. Not one stone was left standing upon another. Those things filled the Teropian Valley with stones that they pushed over from the temple, watching them crash below. And that whole Teropian Valley was filled with the debris that they pushed over the wall at the time of the destruction of the temple. But it fulfilled literally the prophecy of Jesus. As he said, you look at these stones, but there will not be one left standing upon another that will not be thrown down. Thus, as you go up to the Temple Mount, there's no evidence anywhere of where the Temple of Solomon stood. The Temple Mount that he built is there, but there is no evidence at all of the place of the temple, because not one stone was left standing upon another. Interesting. And all of the other prophecies that you heard today have come true in various places around the world, certainly, and over the ages now, talking over 2,000 years, that have occurred. There are only two that haven't. If you keep reading through this end times prophecy that Jesus has here, there are only two things that come further down past where we read today, verse 26 and 27. It talks about heavenly bodies being shaken. Yeah, maybe you could make an argument that that's happened, but I don't think that it's necessarily been the way that Jesus is talking about, because then, following that, the Son of Man comes again in great power and glory, the second coming. So we're still waiting for that to occur. Waiting anxiously, I might say. And it's interesting that, as again, these versions of these prophecies occur in all three of the synoptic gospels. This one is the only one that has this specific verse. And this is what struck out to me. And this, if there were anything, is the verse to remember today, is Luke 21:19. And he says, stand firm and you will win life. This is what that NIV says. I like actually the RSV for that better. In its translation, it says, by your endurance, you will gain your lives. And this is important. This is incredibly important to what we're about today as Christians. But that word, you know, endurance, it's kind of like a bad word, isn't it, you know? Because it's related to other words like perseverance and, oh, patience, you know? And Father Bill and Miranda always used to, and maybe they still do, you know, make the joke that you better not pray for patience because he might make you test that, you know? He may give you the opportunity to test your patience. So don't pray for patience. But you have to pray for patience. And this is what this is all talking about, endurance and patience, you see? And that's what I want to talk about a little bit today. We do have to talk about these things because they are part of being Christians, of the Christian life, okay? The second coming hasn't happened. I'm sorry to tell you if you thought it had. And for thousands of years now, Christians have been waiting, patiently enduring. Now, it's one thing, you see, to when you're striving hard in ministry and you got this thing, I'm going to go do this for God, you know, and you start working towards your goal and it's going on and, yeah, we got to do this and we've got to put that together and look at what God's doing over here and, wow, the doors are just opening and closing all over the place, you know. But, and that's one thing, but then it's another thing when you're just trying to go through your daily life. When you're just trying to make it until evening and you can put your head back down on the pillow at night and you can keep your head above water, so to speak, then this endurance thing actually kind of becomes a little more difficult, but yet makes more sense, you see. We're all in it for the long haul. This is not a short-term thing. And there are going to be ups and downs throughout your Christian life over the years. You put it another way, okay, you know, we picture ourselves putting on the whole armor of God. You know, we've had teaching about the whole armor of God over the years. Ephesians chapter 6, you know, you put on your helmet of salvation, your breastplate of righteousness, your belt of truth, your the shoes of the gospel of peace. You've got your shield, you know, which is the shield of faith, and your sword of the spirit, you know, and there you are standing, and you picture yourself slashing away at the devil, and you've got your, you know, shield up here, and the darts are going, you know, but none of them are getting you. And it's like, yeah, all right, we're doing it now, Lord. But I want you to picture a different image, okay? The image you should have is of that same soldier wearing all of his armor. I don't care if you want him to be a Roman or whatever he looks like, but you're standing there in your picket line, you know, and you're just waiting. And nothing happens. There aren't any darts necessarily flying at you, at least not big ones. There's nothing to slash at the moment, okay? You got all this gear on, and there's nothing to do, okay? You're just standing there, okay? You see, a lot of combat veterans will tell you, and I've heard this before, they say that combat and war is usually days and weeks of boredom followed by seconds of terror, okay? And you understand what I mean by that is that the actual battles can be very short. Very decisive, but very short sometimes. But the setup, the preparation for them, the moving around and digging foxholes and trenches and all that takes a lot of time. And it's the boring work. But this is the stuff that goes on all the time. And then there are seconds of terror that occur somewhere in there when the armies clash. And this you could think of is very similar to our Christian lives. Okay? There are times of intense work for the Lord when we see God doing these incredible things and, you know, all sorts of stuff going on around us, either good or bad, perhaps. And then there are times when it seems that God is not doing a lot. When we're kind of waiting and we're standing there with our armor on and we're waiting. We're just waiting. Okay, Lord, come on. Imagine this. Imagine a Revolutionary War army. Okay? You know, you remember the guys, you know, the rebels stood up in blue, particularly, and of course the English were wearing red, you know, and or you can think of it a Civil War army if you want to as well too. But you know, they would stand there shoulder to shoulder. These soldiers would, lines of them, usually in two lines, okay, holding their weapons, ready to face off against their enemy, who was doing exactly the same thing across the field of battle. And they would stand there in the open knowing that they were fully exposed, standing there directly before loaded guns that were going to fire at them, and they would do this. Can you imagine? Okay? They would stand there. It's hard for us to remember. That was how warfare was fought up until the First World War. And then we started learning, you know, you can hide behind things, you know. And I started learning that it was as just as honorable if you did things like cover and concealment, okay? You learn about cover and concealment just means they can't see you. But cover is where it actually will bounce off the thing before it hits you. But they didn't do that back then. They stood up in the open without cover or concealment. They were wearing bright blue and bright red. You couldn't miss, except that the weapons weren't very accurate. That was your only hope. And they would do this. But this is that image of standing firm. Do you see what I mean? Here's what one writer said about it in relation to the gospel or Christianity. He said, patience may be the making of a soul. That regiment of men is held all the morning waiting under fire. They broke camp with enthusiasm enough to sweep them up into a line of flame. But they're still held through long hours. They might show splendid courage in action, but the orders are to stand, only to stand still under fire. But that day of endurance, is enough to make a veteran of the recruit of yesterday. The discipline of waiting under life's fire makes veteran souls. This is the thing that I'm talking about. You see, it's how we do in the slow times, in the everyday times of our lives, that matter just as much as those when you're on that roller coaster ride that God puts you on sometimes, and things are happening right and left, you know. Patience may be the making of a soul. An example that I thought was applicable to this was in our Old Testament reading from Malachi. And in verse 14, he said, you know, this is the Lord quoting people, and he says, you have said, it is futile to serve God. What do we gain by carrying out his requirements and going about like mourners before the Lord Almighty? You know, that sounds like a bunch of people who are kind of worn out, right? Mm-hmm. They become weary of standing firm. You know, it's like, why do we bother going through this day after day, you know, slaughtering all these, you know, goats and sheep and animals? What a mess it makes, and we got to clean it up every day, you know? Why are we doing this? Nothing ever happens. Nothing ever changes. Well, it didn't work out too well for them if you actually, you know, read through the rest of section in Malachi. They say it's futile to serve God, they say, and God responded to them. Boy, did he either. You have to read that passage about the judgment. It's not very pretty. It's good for those who stand firm, though. But that's the kind of thing I'm talking about here. So, what Jesus says here, and these are Jesus' words I'm talking to you about, stand firm, he says, is that he understands how it's going to be for us. He understands that there are going to be up times and down times. And it's not as easy as it sounds. We get tired. The armor gets heavy. You know, patience and endurance are key, unfortunately. And so that brings up a second thing that's important in this, and that is that there is an eternity for every person. There is an eternity for each one of, not just us, but every person in the world, okay? Whether, you know, it's with Jesus or not, we will all know eternity. And those dead who reject Christ will know eternity too, but it will be without God. This is the difference. See, before people know Jesus, before they've ever come to him, they're already dead. Okay? They don't have life in them. And only in knowing Jesus can we really be made alive. Can we become the humans that he called us to be? Thus, born again. Jesus says, stand firm and you will gain your life. And this is why his statements in Matthew, where he talks about, said, do not be afraid of those who kill the body, cannot kill the soul. Be rather afraid of those who can destroy both body and soul in hell. Okay, whoever finds their life will lose it. Whoever loses their life for my sake will find it. Stand firm and you will gain your life. That's what he's talking about here. Your life is more than just the obvious stuff, you know, work and family and home and, you know, all that sort of thing. It's more than that. So I've always been interested in space exploration. Oh, big surprise. You've not heard that before. You know, I'm a Trekkie, you know, and I've always liked that. There's a show on right now called Mars, and it's put on by National Geographic, and it's a docudrama of, you know, first people going to Mars, what that will be like, and then now they're in the second season, and they're colonizing Mars, and they have it about 2040 or 2045. I don't know if we'll be actually colonizing and setting up. Now they have two colonies there on this thing. But one of the things that's, to me, conspicuously absent in all of this is any mention of religion. Mm-hmm. And you start to say, okay, as we move out, you know, from this planet, from these things that we have known for centuries, can humankind actually exceed the boundaries of Christianity? Can it actually exceed the boundaries of religion? Right? And some of these folks would tell you that that's a case, you know. When we humans eventually move out into the solar system, and we certainly looks like we will, or into the galaxy, even beyond that, will we outgrow Christianity? Will we outgrow religion itself? And, you know, a lot of writers, you know, science fiction writers, or those, you know, put on the shows that you watch on TV, you know, they don't really show Christianity as a part of that, just like this show I'm talking about, that it doesn't really have any part in the future, you know, space exploration, you know. And if they do depict it in their stories, they're kind of, that's not necessarily Christian, but some marginal kind of strange cult, you know, but really don't have any impact on things as it goes along. But these secular scholars, you could call them, or agnostics more likely, often believe that discovery of life on other planets will disprove the existence of God. But they're wrong. They're wrong. That's what I would say. Suppose life is found somewhere in the universe. Well, I understand that God is bigger than the universe. God is bigger than the boogeyman. Right? He's bigger than the universe, too. Right? And you know what? Whether VeggieTales. Okay. So, and whether he told us everything in the Bible about that, you know, I understand he might not have decided to tell us about all these other things that are out there. It's okay. God still remains for me. And he is still there. He is bigger than all that. He created it all. But I will say this, it will be difficult to maintain faith in the future, in that future world, you know, in a place of future exploration, space exploration, technological leaps and bounds, and things like artificial intelligence. Yes, they are challenges to our faith, shall we say. And some of them are big, some of them are little challenges. And sometimes they're daily, those little darts that hit your shield of faith, okay? Over time, they can wear it down, can make you tired, make it hard to stand firm, okay? And I'm specifically thinking of our young people here. They're going to face these challenges, okay? More so than we did. And maybe you're not going to go to Mars. Maybe you want to, I don't know. But somebody in that room might, possibly. They're young enough that they could. Or at least make it out to the moon station, possibly, or on the moon. I don't know. But it will be a difficult time. And they're going to need to know that they need to stand firm. And you will win life. That's what God says. That's what Jesus said. See, life itself is what's at stake here. It's what we're talking about. Well, what life? Well, it's his life that we gain by doing this. His life, you see, because our true selves are found in him. That's not just for us who believe, but for all. They just haven't found their true selves. See, we aren't all that we can be as human until he lives his life through us. By standing firm, this is what happens. He is able to live life through us. Our lives reflect him. God created man in the perfection of the garden, you understand? In the perfection of the Garden of Eden, man was created. Man wasn't created in sin. Man and woman were created without sin. Without sin. Innocent. Perfect, you could say. But it was our introduction, our decision that introduced sin. Our action that led to being thrust out of the garden with no way back to the tree of life. And that was his plan, was that we would not live in that sinful life of eternity, so we couldn't get to the tree of life. And this condition continued from the time of Adam until the beginning of Jesus' ministry. His ministry, his teaching, ultimately his sacrifice on the cross, made us a way back to the tree of life. You see, this time the way is Jesus himself. And as you know all this, that in Jesus we are restored to the place of the first man and woman. We come back to that place. He redeems us. He removes sin. That is life. That is his life. Paul said, not I live, but Christ lives in me. Christ lives in each of us. It's no longer our lives, but his that goes on. Okay? Stand firm and you will win life. That's what Jesus is saying. See, if we were in the Garden of Eden, we wouldn't necessarily have to stand firm. It would be easy, okay? But we live still in the midst of sin, so we have to stand firm. By endurance, you will gain your lives, Jesus said. Eight little words, it means so much there. There will be tough times, and we will be actively persecuted. So he said, beaten, ridiculed, betrayed. So we have to stand firm. And in your mind's eye, it might even be easier in those times when it's really hard. And you know, I can stand firm and I can kind of put myself like this, be ready for it all. But there'll be times that are just ordinary and regular and average and unexciting. Yeah. And maybe you're wondering, God, where are you? And it's in these times that it becomes harder to stand. Because these can go on for a long time, sometimes years. Okay? And the armor gets heavy. But we must stand firm. If the human condition is to be in communion with God, to live together with him, it doesn't matter where we are, whether we're here on Earth or on the moon or on Mars or on some planet going off into the solar system, some spaceship going off into the solar system, we are still and always created to live our lives in God. And the human condition is always and everywhere to be lived with Jesus, that he may live in and through us, if it's going to be really life at all. See, for thousands of years, Christians have waited for the return of Jesus, and we're still waiting. Some have even tried to manufacture the second coming, you know. We have a couple new religions just because of that. Yeah. Some of them can be rather pesky. For thousands of years, we have had to be patient. Some have gone through times of incredible miracles in their lives, great power demonstrations of God, as we have here. But oftentimes it's been slow and steady. And in some lives of the saints, that's the whole way their life has been, just sharing the gospel. Sometimes it's been great suffering and persecution and hardship. And all of these things have required endurance. And some have maybe said, it's futile to serve God. Why do we go through all of this? We're no exception, you see. But we stand firm and we will win life. And so in all of this, am I trying to make you depressed? No, I'm not. But I will give you a piece of advice. And that is that one way to combat the fatigue, that ordinariness, I said, Lord, what do we do about this, you know? The way to keep your patience, Mr. Worship. 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 And so the thing is, is it coming to coming together as a group? Is that the thing that makes it different? Is it hearing the music? Is it singing the words out ourselves? Is it the act of singing? Is it the act of receiving communion? Is it being together and having the fellowship of the body? Yes. It's all of it. You can't isolate out one thing. You know, the thing that got me today in worship were these flowers. I looked up and I was like, wow, those are beautiful. It was an act of worship, you see, as if so many other things throughout the days and years have allowed me to worship. But if we don't worship, we will fall. We will not be able to stand firm. Personal prayer, you hear us talk a lot about that. Your own personal prayer is very important, yes. But worship, either together as a group, if it's in your car, wherever, worshiping God, I think is your key to sticking with this. If you don't go to church anymore, you will start to fall away. Okay? See, the temple was destroyed. Jerusalem was destroyed. Everyone was scattered, you know. There have been wars and rumors of wars over the years. False prophets have come and gone. Earthquakes, pestilence, you know. All these things have happened over and over, and we're still here. Those prophecies have all come true. And so we can believe that the final prophecy will come true, too. He will come again in great power and glory. And we look forward to that time. And we must, in the meantime, stand firm, and we'll win our lives. Amen. Amen.